Good morning, Cowboys Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the Writer's Block Podcast. I am your host, David Hellman, joined by my incredible co-host, Chris Holling. Brandon Clemens couldn't be here tonight, but we are back after taking a week off due to the extended Memorial Day weekend festivities. We're back to talk Cowboys, all things Cowboys, and there's a good bit to talk about. Some things have happened, things that have happened, but things that really have not happened, as is the case for the offseason for the Dallas Cowboys. We're always talking about the things that haven't happened. But before we get into all of those things that make some of us upset or frustrated or anxious, whatever it may be, Chris Holling, how are you doing? How does it feel to be back here talking about the Cowboys after the extended break?
I'm awesome. I mean, it's awesome to, you know, be back in the saddle, and, you know, it's always fun talking about the Cowboys. So yeah, no, it's great to be back, and I'm excited to talk some football.
Yeah. Always great talking about America's team. For those watching on YouTube, you can see I've got a jersey on. This is actually brand new, just came in the mail, number 56. I'll do a quick spin. You can see Cooper Beebe, the future. Did you actually see the name when I spun around?
I did, yes. Okay.
I wasn't sure if you just got the back of my chair. That would have looked really, really stupid. So I'm glad that worked out.
I wouldn't have said anything. I would have just let you slide.
Thank you. Thank you. This is why we work so well as a team. But yeah, Cooper Beebe jersey. Chris, you were saying before the show, I'm probably the only one outside of the Beebe family that has gotten this jersey at this point.
Probably, but it's going to feel that much better when he's like an all-pro within 2 years. And then you...
Within a year, as a rookie.
A rookie all-pro would be pretty incredible, especially after, you know, not really having a Travis Frederick-like presence in the middle since he retired. So that'd be huge.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure... No, that's wrong. Zach Martin did it as a rookie. I don't think he was weak. But... For this week's episode, we do have other things to talk about besides the exciting career yet to be unrevealed for Cooper Beebe. And that is some of the biggest names for the Cowboys. We're recording this Monday, coming out Tuesday morning. Monday, of course, came with it the news that Viking star wide receiver Justin Jefferson got his contract extension that had been kind of in the works, signed a four-year deal. $140 million, has $110 million guaranteed. That's a lot of money. That's, and deservedly so. Justin Jefferson is the highest paid receiver now and has earned every cent of that. But it also begs the question for the Cowboys, why did they not get ahead of this with CeeDee Lamb? I believe Adam Schefter reported it's not expected that CeeDee Lamb's deal will be bigger than Justin Jefferson's. But at the very least, it kind of sets the range for CD. And depending on where they were at in negotiations prior to this, that could have upped the number pretty significantly. One would think it's changed the math for what CD is asking for. And I'm sure his agent is going back and saying, hey, you know, CD's, you know, right in that range of Justin Jefferson. So you got to pay him like Justin Jefferson. Chris, when you heard this news about Justin Jefferson, how upset were you that they actually did it before the Cowboys got CeeDee Lamb done?
I mean, it's kind of frustrating, but it wasn't really a surprise. I think if the Cowboys wanted to get CeeDee Lamb's extension done, I think it was realistically going to have to happen either a long time ago or it was going to have to happen, once it's Justin Jefferson ordeal kind of wrapped up. I think that as it got closer to this time, I think that CeeDee like knew it was best to just keep waiting because he knew Justin was about to get paid. And I mean, you know, it's about $35 million a year. And, you know, I think that now CD's base is, I mean, it's going to be somewhere between 33 and a half to 34, you know, a year. I mean, I can't see it being much lower than that, you know, because I mean, I don't think that he deserves the same amount as CeeDee Lamb, but normally when a player of CeeDee Lamb's caliber, I mean, he just broke the single season record for yards and receptions in Cowboys history. I mean, like when you're a top three player at the position and you're about to get your first contract after your rookie contract, you normally reset the market and you're normally the highest paid player. So I mean, I think that at best, I think the Cowboys are looking at paying CD 33.5, and it wouldn't shock me at all. I mean, if it was about the same or a little bit more, like, it wouldn't overly shock me at this point, because I mean, that's kind of just how the market goes. And you know what's scary is that, I mean, I think CD is 100% worth it, and I think that they should pay him. But what's scary is that, you know, I saw that David Hellman kind of mentioned this on a Twitter or X that, I mean, Micah Parsons is going to look at that deal and he's going to be like, hey, I mean, like, CeeDee Lamb shouldn't be a higher paid player than me. I mean, look what I've done. So, I mean, I think Micah Parsons is going to have the argument like, hey, I mean, like, CeeDee gets 34. I want, you know, like 36, 37. I mean, Micah's been incredible, you know, throughout his career. And I just think that it makes a lot of sense for him to argue that. So, I mean, we're about to have two Cowboys players who are taking up a lot of cap space. And then if they pay Dak Prescott, like, you know, many fans want them to and expect them to, then it could be three players taking up a huge chunk of that cap space. So, I mean, I understand why the Cowboys kind of didn't go all in, I guess, like they said with their salary cap, but because they didn't do that, it makes me concerned about their chances at winning the division, which we'll talk about later this episode.
Yeah, good tease, Chris, by the way. So stick around for that. It's what we've been talking about all offseason. You know, that we knew CeeDee Lamb needed his contract extension. We knew he was going to cost a lot of money. We knew it was only a matter of time until Justin Jefferson had his deal, which, whether or not you pay CD more than Justin Jefferson, it's going to change the numbers. Mm-hmm. And we also know with Micah Parsons, obviously he's on a slightly different timeline because he's got the fifth year option. He's like a year behind, but realistically, like, it makes sense to go ahead and get that done now.
It does, but they didn't do it with CD. So I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if this drags out more.
They didn't do it with CD, even though it would have made sense. They didn't do it. We're not doing it with Micah, even though it would have made sense.
Yeah.
So. And I know you've made the argument for moving on from Dak Prescott, but if you're
I'm not arguing moving on directly. I'm just arguing waiting at this point. In my opinion, there's no point to do it now. You might as well just wait until the end of the season and see what happens. Right.
But they should have done it. Like,
I agree. If they were going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, like, in my opinion, you know, like, there's a narrative that I, like, hate Dak and I want to move on. It's not necessarily the case. I just think that, like, I honestly was pretty split. Like, from what I've seen from him, I was cool going either direction. I could have seen either side. Like, if they wanted to blow it up and move on from Dak, I wouldn't have been as devastated as a lot of fans will be. If they pay him, I won't be as excited as a lot of fans will be, but I won't be upset about it because, I mean, he did just finish as the MVP runner-up. I mean, he's a great player in the NFL. I'm just concerned about putting that much money into a guy and limiting what you can do around him, and he hasn't proven that he can take that great talent past the divisional round. And I know that there's, you know, cases where it wasn't all on him, you know, but you know, point being is, if the Cowboys were to extend Dak Prescott, my argument was that they should have done it prior to the free agency period, because then they could have used some money and they could have brought in some more help around him. To do it now is the least efficient way possible, because I think at this point it's more efficient to just wait. Because here's the thing, personally, I don't think that he's going to have a better season this upcoming year than he did last year. So I don't necessarily think that, you know, waiting until the end of the season is necessarily the worst case scenario. If that's what they want to do at this point, I think if you were going to pay him, it would have made much more sense doing it before free agency, prior to the draft, freeing up cap space right now. To do it, like, let's say if they do it in like July or August, to me, like, I'll be happy that, you know, Dak is still on the team, but like, it'll just make me a little, you know, just like, I would say I'm a little confused, because like, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It seems like the least efficient way that they could have, you know, gone about that whole process.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like, the only thing at this point that extending Dak Prescott gets you is knowing for a fact that he's your quarterback in 2025 and beyond, which, to be fair, is a good thing. Like, you know, you can,
I think all things considered, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. I mean, listen,
yeah, you can debate about whether or not he's the guy to take them to the Super Bowl, but
I agree.
I don't think it's like unrealistic to say if the Cowboys do move on from him after this year, they're going to be bad in 2025.
Oh, like, yeah,
unless Trey Lance turns out to just be a superstar out of absolutely nowhere. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a year at least of adjustment.
That's probably 100% true. And, too, I mean, if you looked around the NFL, if Dak Prescott enters free agency and he's not, you know, on a contract, he's going to command a massive bidding war between a lot of teams that think that they're a quarterback away. I could see like, I mean, like the Steelers, I think the Steelers would be all in on him because, you know, it's not like they're paying Russell Wilson that big contract anyway. They'd have the cap space. I think there's a lot of contenders who would go all in on Dak. So, I mean, if you asked about 20 to 22 teams in the NFL if they change their quarterback for Dak Prescott, they're probably saying yes. My only concern is that you know, I just feel like at some point the cow, you know, maybe it's just not meant to be in Dallas. And like, that's not, you know, a shot at Dak. I think Dak's a good, I think he's an excellent regular season quarterback. I just think that, you know, just trying the same method over and over and over again, it's not necessarily working for the Cowboys in the postseason. It's continuously giving them a 20s pick. And that's why I can see the appeal of, you know, maybe we just have one bad year. You still have CeeDee Lamb extended. You have Trayvon extended. You have Micah extended. Maybe you have one bad year and you shoot your shot at a high draft pick and the following year. And maybe, you know, I mean, like maybe you get lucky at a quarterback. I don't know. I mean, it's a risky business, but if they can find a quarterback who's tremendous on a rookie contract, it benefits the whole salary cap situation. So, I mean, it's risky, but I mean, it goes both ways. I'm totally cool either way they go. I'm not going to be devastated if they sign Dak. I love Dak Prescott. I think that he's a great regular season QB, and he puts the Cowboys in a better chance to win than if it was Trey Lance. I'm not an idiot. I understand that. I'm not. I have no confidence that Trey Lance could do what Dak Prescott does or even come close to it. So I agree.
This is where it's a good thing that Brandon is not on that one.
Yes.
100%. Because we at least agree on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, 100%. I think if the Cowboys do move on from Dak, their answer isn't Trey Lance. Maybe for 1 year, their future answer is in the draft somewhere. That's realistically what I think.
Well, and the other thing is Trey Lance is also a free agent after this year as of right now. So, like, the Cowboys have no quarterback that is under contract for 2025 at this point. So, like, That in itself creates issues, and that once again gives even more leverage to Dak Prescott, who, by the way, he has all the leverage. Like, there's zero reason for him to give any concessions to the Cowboys at this point, and
unless he really doesn't care about the money, like you said.
Yeah, well, and you got to give credit to Dak because he plays this game very, very well. Not the football game, although I would agree with that. He does play football pretty good. He throws the ball, you know, very, very good in my opinion.
I agree. I think he did too.
He's a good public relations negotiator. Since we last hopped on here and got to talk all things Cowboys, Dak Prescott gave an interesting soundbite when he was asked about his contract. He said, "I don't play for money. Never cared for it. To be honest with you, would give it up just to play this game. So I allow that to the business people to say what it's worth, what they're supposed to give a quarterback of my play, a person of my play, a leader of my play. For me, it's about control what I can control, handle that part, and the rest will take care of itself." So Dak is saying, "I just do this for the love of the game." That's he doesn't care what he gets paid.
Cap. That's what the new age cap right there. And that's totally fine. Here's the thing. If Dak Prescott wants to play for the money, he has every right to play for the money. I mean, he has every right to ask for as much money as he ever wants. I'm not pocket watching everyone, and I'm not suggesting that he does this, but if that quote was really true and he really didn't care about the money, he would take a little less to put better players around him. And I'm not saying he should do that. I don't like when people say, "Oh, Dak's a selfish player. He's not doing that." I'm not saying he should do that. I probably wouldn't do that if I was in his shoes. I'm just saying that if that quote was actually true and you really, really meant that, then you would do that. And like, my thing is this. He has no reason to do that because he was severely underpaid for the first 4 years of his NFL career. And now he's making up for that. I mean, he was making less than $1 million per year after he won Offensive Rookie of the Year. He didn't hold out. He didn't like pout, you know, I mean, like Ezekiel Elliott, you know, I mean, like he was holding out a year before he even needed to get paid. And he was making fourth overall pick money. He was getting paid. He was making like $7 million a year. Like, he was getting good money and he was still holding out and he was in Cabo.
He was getting paid well enough to financially support Dak Prescott those first 4 years.
That's what I'm saying. And Dak was like, "You know what? I'll wait. I'll be patient." And that's the thing. It's not, and like, here's my thing too. I think that I don't think it's the Cowboys, or no, I don't think it's necessarily on Dak that the Cowboys aren't going to have cap space. I mean, yes, maybe on the books it will be. It's on the Cowboys for not having success when Dak Prescott was making that kind of money, because you're seeing what the 49ers are doing right now. They're putting as much as they can around Brock Purdy because he's not making any money right now. And the moment that Brock Purdy's making the money that he's probably going to make, because he's probably going to, you know, I mean, like, he's made the Super Bowl, assuming, I mean, like, I hope this isn't the case, but if he wins the Super Bowl before his, you know, contract comes up, then, I mean, he's going to be among the top highest paid quarterbacks in the league as well. And at that point, they won't be able to do what they're doing right now, giving him Debo, Ayuk, Kittle, McCaffrey, all these defensive players, and being aggressive. What they're doing is exactly what it's exactly what the Cowboys should have done when Dak Prescott was on his rookie contract. And that's what a lot of other teams have been doing as well around their rookie quarterbacks. And that's what makes me almost want a rookie quarterback, but I have no reason to believe that the Cowboys would change and do it, because they didn't do it last time.
Yeah, that's really my biggest issue with resetting a QB. Because if you're going to say, like, we're going to go with a young, cheap quarterback, whether it's Trey Lance and you extend him on, like, a really cheap deal, which they realistically could, or you, you know, draft somebody, which I don't like that idea, because the Cowboys have not really, I mean, they got lucky with Dak Prescott in the fourth round of a draft where they tried to trade up for Paxton Lynch. They tried to trade up for Connor Cook. Neither of those guys are in the NFL right now. And they had to settle for Dak Prescott as their third option in that draft.
Oh yeah.
And he turned out to be incredible.
Yeah.
But like, we've seen them draft quarterbacks and they don't turn out. The quarterbacks that they are drawn to, like Jerry Jones being literally talked out of drafting Johnny Manziel, that was horrible. it was a horrible pick for the Browns when they took him 32nd overall, and the Cowboys almost took him like
14. I think it was 14.
14.
It was 16 or 14. It was one of the two.
I think it was pick 14 in 2014. No, pick 16 in 2014. Look, I'm not a numbers guy, guys.
Yeah.
Give me a break. But
I thought you were the stats guy. I'm more of an eye test guy. You're more the stats and analytics guy.
Hey, now. I'm selectively a numbers guy.
All right.
But, no, I mean, as far as the quarterback goes, like, Chris, everything you said, like, I was nodding my head aggressively the whole time.
I like that, because I feel like that doesn't happen too much, and you know, it makes me happy.
And it's not going to last in this episode. Okay. We're going to get to some disagreement for sure.
All right.
But yeah, Dak deserves every bit of money that comes his way. He was underpaid. He for the first 4 years of his career, he had by far the largest gap between on-field production and actual salary compensation. Like, he was playing like, you know, borderline top 10 for those first four years.
He never said a word about it. He didn't care. He was just
never said a word.
Down, just focus.
Hardly got paid. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he was making $1 million in those first 3 years. Like,
he wasn't. I think his first year was like 600K. I think the highest that he got in his rookie contract per year, just base salary. I mean, I don't know about incentives and whatnot. And like, you know, I mean, like, obviously he probably made some good, good endorsement money, but like just base salary, I don't think he ever topped like 700 something thousand in a season, which is incredibly underpaid.
Which is crazy considering all the things that he did in those first 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, he won a rookie of the year.
I don't care. I don't care one bit about how much he's making. And I also don't care that he's saying this about like, I don't do it for the money. Cause of course you have to say that. Like, if he came out and said like, yeah, I play this game to get paid. Like, I want the money. Like, then it would be a real problem. Then the internet would be melting down. So I have zero opinion on that, really, other than go get your bag, Dak.
100%. I think he should. I'm just saying I'm not saying that he should take less money, but if the quote was actually his true feelings, he wouldn't be against taking less money. That's kind of my argument. Yeah, but I don't think he should do that. I think he should get as much money as he possibly can, support your family, you know. I mean, like, set your daughter and set her kids up for as much financial freedom as you possibly can for their
entire life.
That's what I mean. I think that's everyone's goal in life. So
speaking of Cowboys who also care about the money and are a little bit more public about it, another one being Micah Parsons, who we've already kind of touched on. Of course, he hasn't been with the team for OTAs. He's been working out separately. He's been doing that pretty much all offseason. And of course, part of it is, you know, he already kind of generally works out by himself and works privately, but also has now the contract negotiations. He wants to get a deal done. I don't think there's a doubt that whenever that deal does get done, he'll be the highest paid defensive player and like probably
the highest paid non-quarterback ever.
Yeah.
I think realistically he has every argument to be. So
yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't even be shocked. It would be a little surprising, but I wouldn't be shocked if he becomes the highest paid player just because he's of that caliber. Like he's on the level.
Less than $40 million a year, it's a good deal for the contract. I mean, it's a good deal for the Cowboys. I think he's probably getting 40 plus, which is tough to imagine one defensive player making that kind of money. But I mean, we haven't seen someone of his age do so much already. You know?
Right. And he's going to get a big payday no matter what. But Mike McCarthy was asked last week if he feels like Micah has missed an opportunity not being here with the team. He said, I think any time that you have a chance to be together, it's an opportunity to improve, whether it's in the mental realm, the physical realm, the emotional connection, and so forth. It's a long year. Training camp is really the heightened focus for all of that. But it's definitely an opportunity that's been missed for Parsons. Obviously, because it's the Dallas Cowboys, we're going to break this down and overanalyze everything that Mike McCarthy says. Yeah. Chris, does this worry you, or are you just – because some people on Twitter are like freaked out about this. They're like, oh, Mike McCarthy's mad at Micah Parsons. He wants him here. And if Mike McCarthy's saying this, knowing Mike Zimmer, who hasn't even had a chance to coach
– yeah, I mean, I'm sure Mike Zimmer wouldn't like him there. I'm sure Mike Zimmer –
he's probably got like steam coming out of his ears.
I'm sure Mike Zimmer would like to have his star player be there considering he's coaching a new defense. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'm under the belief that Mike McCarthy is coaching his final season in Dallas anyway. So I don't think it's going to be a big deal in terms of the Micah Parsons, you know, relationship. But I mean, I'm not concerned at all about Micah Parsons not being there. It's a voluntary OTA. And here's my thing. If let's say that it was somebody who severely underperformed last season or at any point in his career, they should be there because they need as much, you know, teamwork as they can. Like Jalen Tolbert should be there realistically because he is, you know, I mean, he's unproven. He's fighting for a starting spot. I mean, those kind of players should be there. Micah Parsons has been, in my opinion, the best defensive player in the league since he got drafted. And I mean, he's had the same, you know, I mean, like he's had the same routine since he came in the NFL. And to me, like, I'm not even questioning his leadership about it because just watching it, you know, like from my couch, because I'm not there in the locker room, but just watching it on the TV, it seems like he's one of the more outspoken and passionate players and showing the most passion when he's on the field. A lot of players, when they're getting blown out or when they're really good, they're kind of just like, oh, like whatever. I mean, Micah seems to be genuinely really bothered when they lose in the playoffs. Like he really, really, it does not make him happy. And he talks about it a lot. He's the one showing the passion who wants the Cowboys to go all in free agency. He was very outspoken that he wanted the Cowboys to make moves and that, you know, like he wanted to see an aggressive approach. And I think he was upset with the way that, you know, this offseason went for the Cowboys and the players who they passed up on and the players who, you know, they ended up letting walk in free agency. And I mean, to me, just because Mike is working out by himself doesn't make him not a team leader. It doesn't make him, I mean, yes, he's not, I mean, you know, in terms of leadership on the team, there's no question that Dak Prescott is the team leader. He's been the perfect character since he stepped foot in that facility. He's never had an off the field issue and he's just led by example as any, you know, top tier franchise quarterback would. I mean, but Micah Parsons doesn't have to do that. I mean, he's not the quarterback. He's a defensive, you know, I mean, like he's really an edge rusher. So, I mean, he doesn't have to be the main guy leading by example in the team locker room. I think everyone there respects Micah and loves Micah, likes playing next to him because he makes their job way easier. Do you think that Osa would be nearly as effective if he didn't have Micah Parsons right next to him? I think that DeMarcus Lawrence has played better because he's not been the number one edge rusher since Micah got there. I think that, you know, in my opinion, I think that Tank's, you know, play kind of went down a little bit, you know, in that little, you know, I want to say like that little blurb where they didn't have Micah Parsons and it was after
Mike Nolan era when
Yeah. I mean, the whole defense played, you know, it was like a whole 360 in terms of their play and performance, and you know they have this swag to them. I think that the whole team acknowledges Mike as the best player on the defense and probably on the team, And I just don't think that him not being there is like negatively impacting anyone's relationship with him in the locker room. I think it's just people who aren't in the locker room who are just overreacting because, you know, they're like, oh, he's not there. But I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think, I mean, he's still going to these games with Trayvon Diggs and Osa, and he's still, you know, I mean, he's being around his teammates. I don't think it's a big deal. If he was missing mandatory stuff and he was, you know, doing stuff like that, then it would be a little bit of a different case scenario. But this is a voluntary OTA. You don't have to be there. He's still putting in work. He's still, you know, making sure he's ready. As long as he gets 14 sacks next year, like he's been doing the past, a year, and you know he's been putting up numbers near that his whole career. If he keeps doing that, then I don't care if he is working out, you know, in like Australia, you know, in the desert by himself. He can do whatever he wants. I don't, you know, it doesn't matter to me as long as he's putting up production on the field. Do whatever you want to do. You know, I'm not going to complain, and I don't think that, you know, fans should be over, I don't think that fans should be over analyzing this and being like, oh, Micah's not a good leader. I think if every player on the Cowboys was as dedicated to being good on the football field as Micah was, and they had like that drive. I mean, he never takes a play off the entire game. He's running all over the field. He's chasing the running back on the opposite end of the field. I mean, those were highlight plays that he had his rookie year and last year and the year before that, that sets him apart from the rest of the defense. I mean, he's chasing running backs who are going the opposite direction from him 20 yards down the field. I mean, he's doing everything. So to me, his whole leadership thing, you know, his whole leadership being questioned because he's not there is just dumb to me. I'm not buying into that. And I just think it's kind of like a, I don't know where else I'm going with this. I think I've ranted enough. I'm going to let you talk about it, but that just really bothers me. As you can tell, I got a Micah thing right there. So right. Micah's my favorite player in the league right now. So I'm going to defend that dude. And the Cowboys need to pay him any money that they, whatever money Micah wants, they better pay him, because the worst nightmare of my entire existence, and I think any Cowboys fan's existence, would be him going to Philadelphia. And if he doesn't re-sign in Dallas, that would be my number one fear, because I think he loves the way that their front office handles their off seasons. And I don't know. And it's home for him too. So keep him in Dallas. Do whatever it takes.
Well, we just said that, you know, we're agreeing so much, it's not going to last. And here's where it ends, because we disagree on this. I will say now, as far as the Mike McCarthy component of it goes, in that same press conference where he gave that quote that I just read off, he also went on to quote former Cowboys linebacker Darren Hambrick, who in 2001, when he was holding out of voluntary workouts because of a similar contract dispute, he was quoted as saying, "What do voluntary mean?" Mike McCarthy threw that quote out there in that same breath of saying, you know, I'll just say, what do voluntary mean? Which, first off, great pull by Coach McCarthy, you know, coming up with the fan lore there. So hats off to you, Coach McCarthy. For me, I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Cowboys have a Micah Parsons problem. I'm not going to say that, because at the end of the day, you keep a generational player like Micah Parsons. Generational gets thrown around a lot these days. Micah Parsons truly does fit that description of a generational player. My issue, and what this really comes down to for me, is if you're going to pay a player the way that they're going to pay Micah Parsons and the way that they should pay Micah Parsons, what you want to see from him, in addition to being an insanely talented player, is being a leader. And I think that's really the one area where Micah Parsons really needs to grow. A lot of people are talking about his run defense. Sure, I think a lot of that comes down to the way that Dan Quinn kind of fit this defense. Micah Parsons wasn't really used as a run defender. That's a whole other topic.
I agree.
Micah Parsons, when it comes to his leadership, and granted, we're, you know, saying this from a pretty significant distance from the team. We're not in the locker room. We're not meeting with these players. Like, you know, we're just going off the vibes, as they say. But I mean, you see, like, you know, you see how Dak Prescott responds after a loss, right? You see how Tank Lawrence responds after a loss. And I'm always going to remember after the 49ers lost last year, where someone was asking Micah Parsons, like, they were asking him about how to stop the run. And he goes, well, we got to go, like, whoever needs to get that figured out needs to get it figured out. Like, I don't know whose job that is. That's not my job. That's somebody else's job to figure that out. And I was like, come on, man.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's kind of an immature answer for sure.
That is not what you want to see out of a leader. Like,
yeah, it is an immature. You know,
we get the same response out of Dak every time that they lose a game, which is like, he's just like, yeah, I'm mad. We'll be better next time. And it gets old because it's the same, but like, it's still the same. And it's the response you want of like, yeah, we're mad. We're going to use this. We're going to be better for it. Micah was like, yeah, it's not me. I got my sacks.
Like, it is. Here's the thing.
Don't be looking at me.
It's a not okay. Like you're saying, it's not a good thing to say. But I mean, he is right. He's right.
He did his part. He did. But at the same time, if you're a leader, you're not.
I know. You're right.
That's not like if Dak had come out of that playoff game and been like, "Hey, man, like I didn't give up 42 points to Jordan Love. I didn't get run over by, you know, Aaron Jones. Like I did my part. Like people would have." People would have even if we're taking away the picks, like even if he did play a good game and it was just, you know, the defense played the rest of the game that they played. Like if he come out and said, like, hey man, I did my part. What do you want from me? Like go ask Dan Quinn these questions. Like Twitter would like fully completely break.
I think there's a difference in the leadership and responsibilities of the quarterback of the most valuable franchise in the NFL and an edge rusher, in my opinion. I do agree that there are answers
to a very, very small extent. But like again, like Michael wants to be a leader. He wants to be, you know, the guy that like leads the charge for the team. And the only reason that I really think that this is I would say concerning for me, not even really an issue, but just concerning. Because it's not the first time that we've heard rumblings of issues and some discontent in the locker room, not necessarily from players, but a few different reporters out there, including Jory Epstein, who's very well connected, comes from the Dallas Cowboys beat. You know, Cowboys fans definitely know who Jory Epstein is. She's great at what she does. She had reported from a couple of anonymous executives that there was this perception among executives, which granted is very different from opinions of coaches or players, but this opinion that he does take some plays off, that he doesn't quite step up in the biggest moments. And
I don't see that.
I kind of do. Honestly, I kind of do. Because you think back to that 49ers game, think to that Packers game. How many big plays did he have versus how many of those sacks come against Daniel Jones or Sam Howell, guys that just like stand there and are like, hey, Micah, I'm going to come towards you. Like, you know, you get four sacks just from Sam Howell being the quarterback.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think that I think a big thing could be, honestly, I think that Micah gives 110% throughout the regular season, and maybe he just is worn out by the time those playoffs come around. And I know that that's a weak excuse, and I know that everyone's worn out, but like, I don't know. I mean, like, maybe that's the case, but I don't think that and also, too, in the playoffs, like, I want to see how much Micah is being double teamed, how much he's being mauled. I mean, like he drew the first holding call in like what felt like half a year in that playoff game. And there were probably more that could have been called too. So, I mean, we'll see if it was a scheme thing, if it was a Dan Quinn thing, if it was a Micah thing or not. But my thing too is that I think that there's a leadership question around Micah Parsons, mostly because I think that people aren't happy with his podcasting and his eagerness to build his own brand and image in sports talk and podcasting and stuff. Me personally, I don't have an issue with it because I think that, I mean, this isn't necessarily what you want in terms of the coach and what an ownership, but from a player and person perspective, like, if I was on the most marketable team in sports, I would want to take advantage of that in my prime. And like, here's the thing too, at the end of the day, he can talk about whatever he wants in his free time as long as he's producing on the field. And I guarantee you that Mike is going to lead the team in sacks next year. He's probably going to have 12 plus, 13 plus, and you know, he'll be in the running for defensive player of the year. So as long as he's doing that and we're not seeing a significant drop in his production, then I mean, like, he can do whatever he wants. It's kind of like how Shaq was. I mean, Shaq had a horrible, you know, I mean, like, apparently Kobe was always upset at him because he had a horrible work ethic. But, I mean, I mean, as long as he's balling on the court, and Shaq gets, and in my opinion, I think Micah is getting the same treatment that Shaq got. He's just so dominant that they're giving these offensive linemen the ability to just hack him and the ability to just, you know, hold him and, you know, just try and prohibit him from making big plays. I don't know. I see the similarities, but, you know, maybe that's,
you know, a shot. I think that's a good, like, analogy, especially because I think like Kobe and like Michael Jordan had like that kind of, like, yeah, work ethic, that mentality. Like, they were in the gym, like, and if you weren't in the gym, they were gonna like beat you up.
Call you out on it, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think Dak is necessarily as abrasive as either of those guys were, but he's very much of the same type of mindset of like, he's constantly in the gym working out. Like, he built a backyard, literally a backyard football field.
That was regulation. Work out with guys, 100 yards and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and like, again, to that same point, like, he wasn't making money. And then when he made money, he didn't even like spend it on, you know, going out and getting all the nice cars. Like, he spent it on like training and developing his teammates. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, and then you, to, so like, the Cowboys have a guy in Dak Prescott who is very much the model, like, leadership guy that you want. And then contrast that with Micah Parsons, who doesn't act like that at all, really. Not to say he's not a leader, but like, the, just the actions is very different. Like, he doesn't work out with the team until it's required to. Like, he's constantly on his podcast, which, again, like, more power to him. Like, fully, like, this is, he's not the exception here. Like, every player has a podcast these days.
Yeah.
Like, go get your money, like, set yourself up for future opportunities when you're done playing.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's building,
you know, the NFL stands for not too long.
I was about, like, to say, yeah. Oh yeah, no, I mean, like, he's setting himself, yeah, up to have a good, you know, social media or broadcasting role.
But at the same time, like, when you're sitting there and you're like, hey, man, I haven't seen, like, hey, I've been here in OTAs and I'm sweating because it's summer and it's hot in Dallas, and I'm working out and I'm in shape and I haven't seen Micah. And guess what? I turn it on and he's out there interviewing Jordan Love and being like, hey, tell me how you cooked us in the playoffs. Like, walk me through it. Like, to me as a fan, that makes me a little upset. Not as upset as some people got, but like, if I'm just wondering how long before all of that manifests itself into issues in the locker room, whether it's coaches like needing, you know, wanting more of an example from him being set, or players that are like, you know, like, what the heck? Like, I just, that's where my issue really comes. That's, and again, I will caveat with, I still love Micah Parsons. He's still an incredible player. Cowboys, like, give him a blank check, whatever number he writes on there, pay it, because you're not going to go find another Micah Parsons. Just not.
I think he's the most.
Every team has tried to get a Micah Parsons since they drafted him, and they haven't.
I think when you look at talented, just natural freak athlete, just dominance in terms of just what you can bring on defense, like, I think the last person who has the athleticism and just playmaking ability is like a Deion Sanders in Dallas, and like maybe a DeMarcus Ware as well. But like, that kind of stuff, like, Micah Parsons is one of one in terms of what he can do on the field. He can, and like, this is my thing too. I think that where you have him lined up is going to definitely impact his run defense. Because I mean, if you have him rushing off the edge, most of what Dan Quinn wanted him to do was to just run as fast as you could at the quarterback and try and sack him. And he was really good at that. And the thing is normally when you do that, you're overcommitting and you're leaving an option for the running back, you know, to run by you. And like, I don't think that that's, you know, a bad thing on Micah. I genuinely believe if you put Micah Parsons at like the, like, middle linebacker position, if you put him at linebacker, he'd be the best linebacker on the team. Cause that's what he came in the league to do. And like, I think that if you put him at linebacker, he would be the best run defender on the team. Cause if that's what you assigned him to do, he would do it. I don't think that's necessarily what he wants to do, because I mean, it's a lot more fun to go chase the quarterback than to, you know,
run around. Anyone wants him to.
I was about to say, I don't think anyone wants to do that. But if you absolutely had to, like, that's how good he is. It's like, he can do so many things. I don't think he's even awful in coverage either. I mean, like, we saw him in his rookie year; he was all over the place. He was doing crazy. I mean, he can do anything. I kind of want to see him take a little running back snap one day, you know, when it's within the 5-yard line, you know. I want to see if he can get in there, because he was an athlete at a high school. He was, you know, making plays at running back. So I don't know. I think
maybe that's why the Cowboys didn't draft a running back, because they know
Micah is actually the X fat or a running back, and he's going to do both. But if that's the case, then his contract's going to be even more expensive. So, but I just think that, you know,
actually that's a fair question. If he was playing two positions, but the other position is the least valuable position in football, like, does it boost up his value, or would it tank lower his?
Does it average out? Like, you know, yeah. Is it an average of both? I don't. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, pretty much what I'm saying is, I just think I understand that people want him there, and I mean, in a perfect world, he would be there. I'm not saying that I would rather him not be there, but like, I don't think it's worth freaking out about as long as he's producing the way he's producing. I don't think it's worth losing. You know, I don't think it's worth losing your marbles over. I don't think he is not doing what he's doing, because I mean, he looks prepared week one every single season. He looks like he's in better shape than everyone. He looks like he's, you know, a dominant force. I'm sure that week one, you know, in Cleveland, he's going to be chasing Deshaun Watson and making things difficult for him. So, I mean, and like, here's the thing, if he comes out looking flat, then it's not going to be a good look. And I'll admit that. I'll be like, oh, like, you should have been there. But we haven't seen that once in his career. And this is a thing that he's been doing pretty much like his career. I think after his rookie year, I think even, you know, I think his sophomore year, he kind of did this as well. And I think he just has his own workout regimen that I don't think the rest of the team can keep up with. I mean, if we're being honest, like, I can't see a lot of these defensive linemen being able to do what Micah's doing in terms of, you know, like, these freak workouts and stuff. So, I mean, you know, like, to each their own. I think that, yes, and like, my biggest critique actually is the fact that my biggest reason for him being there is the fact that Mike Zimmer's there. I think that, yeah. I think that if this was Dan Quinn again, like, Dan Quinn knows what he has in Micah. I mean, like, both of them were really tight and they had a really good relationship apparently. Like, in that situation, then it's cool, it's whatever. I do think when you have a new coach who hasn't worked with you and who hasn't been able to, you know, really see what, I mean, I don't want to say see what you can do because Mike has proven it, but like, see what he can use you in packages and schemes and all that. I think that in that case, you would want to build that relationship as much as you can. Now, granted, they could be texting every single day. They could be, you know, Skyping, they could be Zooming, they could be doing all these different things. And like, we don't know about it, but you know, from a fan perspective, I do see that side. I think that he should be there and he should be, you know, with Mike Zimmer because he's new to the team and he's new and like, he's building his scheme, and it would be good to have your best player there giving his input on what he thinks works well around him. Cause I mean, I think the defense goes as far as Micah Parsons takes them.
Yeah. No, and I was going to say the same thing about the Mike Zimmer factor too, because as you pointed out, like, you know, Micah was with the team in the offseason pretty consistently as a rookie when he was learning the scheme and everything. That was also Dan Quinn's first year. So since then, it's like he learned the scheme pretty quickly. He also, you know, as you were saying, I mean, Micah Parsons' role in Dan Quinn's defense after year one wasn't really all that complicated. It was like, basically like, pick wherever you want to line up and go get the quarterback. Like,
yeah.
You know, all these other players had other responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I think for Micah, it was like, just go get the quarterback. You know, if Josh Dobbs pulls the ball and runs past you, like, that's not your fault. Which is what
I mean, like, here's the thing, if he does that, like, I mean, if quarterbacks do that, like, Micah has the athleticism to still go get him, you know what I mean? Like, so, but yeah, yeah. I think that same
but, Micah, with Zimmer though, like, it is a new scheme, and to your point about like, if the Cowboys wanted him to play some more linebacker, which could be the case, it sounds like Zimmer wants to primarily keep him on the edge, which is,
I think that's the right choice.
The right call.
I think they should keep him at edge. I don't think that you should sacrifice any injury potential, because I think linebackers are more likely to get hurt. And also too, I think that you're sacrificing a generational impact versus like an elite impact. I think he could be an elite linebacker. I just don't think it's the same.
But also, we don't even know what he looks like at linebacker in this scheme.
Yeah.
Zimmer hasn't had the opportunity to see him in it.
Yeah.
So that's also part of it. And Zimmer had a quote last week where I don't have it pulled up to read the exact thing, but basically he said, well, most of the time when I take over a defense, it's a pretty bad group. And so it takes a little bit for us to really get all on the same page.
Yeah.
But here I'm taking over a great defense.
Yeah, his defense is incredible. So, I think it's got some
holes. And Micah Parsons is a big part of that. Like, to your point, he clears things up for other guys. He clears things up for Osa. He clears things up for DeMarcus Lawrence. He speeds up the quarterback so that it's easier for Trayvon and DeRozan.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a luxury to have Micah getting that pressure so fast, and then you have to throw it up, and you have two of the best ball hawks in the NFL on both sides of the field. Like, you know, it's going to be very difficult for quarterbacks. I'm super excited to see, you know, Trayvon with the new Deron Bland. I don't want to say the new, but like Deron Bland took a huge leap in production last year, and I think that happened because he got to play outside more and he got to develop. And, you know, I mean, like, he's having another year with Al Harris. I think that duo is the best cornerback duo in the NFL. And it's just so crazy to think about, because, you know, when I was a Cowboys fan, obviously, when I was growing up, like, it felt like the Cowboys.
Back in my day.
Yeah, I was about to say, back in my day, it felt like.
2012.
Yeah, I was about to say, it felt like Cowboys cornerbacks were among the bottom of the league every single year. And, you know, like, they had Brandon Carr, and, you know, like, they had a Byron Jones year that was really good.
But
like,
Claiborne.
Yeah. I mean, never to the standard of this. I think Trayvon's the best corner in the league. I'll argue that with anyone. But I know that that's a hot take to a lot of people's eyes. But then Deron Bland, I think, should have won Defensive Player of the Year last year. So, I mean, it's just insane to have both of them on the same team, and then to have Micah rushing the passer and to have Lawrence on the other side. If they can just shore up the middle of their defensive line and they can get some good linebacker play, then they have no reason to not be a top three defense in the NFL. So I'm sorry. I know that you were talking and I kind of went on a spiel there. So I'll let you finish your thing, but I just had to get that out because I'm so excited to see what Trayvon can do.
I love when you do that, because like the last few weeks you've been kind of like doom and gloom. You're like, man, this team, I don't know. Like, they're not that good.
To be excited about. They're
competing more with Washington for second place than they are with Philly for first place. But then you really get going and you're like, man, this defense top three, like, book it.
I mean,
like,
I love the defense. Listen, the reason they're closer to Washington is because their starting running back is going to be Ezekiel Elliott. And I don't think that that's a recipe for success for any NFL team looking.
But also, their starting running back won't be Ezekiel Elliott.
It will be. I will bet.
We already made this bet. You're going to shave the Adidas logo in your eyebrows.
No, like, if Ezekiel Elliott's – if both players are healthy and Rico Dowdle is running back one against the Cleveland Browns, I'll shave my head. That's just not happening.
What do you define as running back one? Having more snaps?
No,
more
like carries, like
keeping the guess, first snap of the game.
I mean, I'm not going to say more carries, but on the depth chart, like if the first series of the game they're bringing out Rico Dowdle instead of Ezekiel Elliott in Zeke's first game, there's just no shot. There's no way that's happening. And maybe throughout the year it develops and Rico kind of sways the tide a little bit, but I doubt it. I don't think they're ever going to put Rico Dowdle in the game in a pressure win situation over Ezekiel Elliott. I don't think Dak was ever going to let that fly. I don't think that Jerry Jones wants that from his marketing standpoint. It's just, I think that it sucks because I think Zeke is going to make Rico Dowdle, I think it's going to make it harder for him to break out because he's not going to get the reps that he deserves. Rico Dowdle is a better running back right now than Ezekiel Elliott is. 100%, in my opinion. There's no debate. I think Rico Dowdle is better. He's more explosive. He honestly provides more of a threat in the receiving game, and that's not even like, you know, his biggest skill. I just think that Ezekiel Elliott right now, he doesn't have the explosiveness. I think Ezekiel Elliott is a great pass blocking fullback. And, you know, I don't want to hate on him, but like, that's how it feels to me. And that's going to be your running back one against a team in the Cleveland Browns who has one of the best defenses in the NFL. I don't see it as a recipe for success. If Ezekiel Elliott, and that's why you cannot be a 12-win team and Ezekiel Elliott is your starting running back in 2024. I'm sorry.
Look, I will say this, and then we're going to wrap it up because we went way off topic.
But I'll say this.
Rico Dowdle is the number one guy in this running back rotation. Zeke is going to be their third, their downhill when they need a couple of yards, whether it's third and short. He's going to be their pass protecting running back because he's good at that. And Deuce Vaughn is going to have a role in this offense as kind of the outside, get him in space kind of guy. He's going to get used in the passing game. He's going to get used on some of those outside running plays. And it's really going to be the three of them. I'm calling my shot here on that. And it's going to be we're going to struggle to define whether or not Zeke is the running back one in this. And ultimately, I'm going to say that, Chris, you have to shave your head because he's not going to be running back.
I didn't define the length of the shave, though. I didn't define bald versus like putting it on a three and just buzzing it up. You know what I mean? So I found a loophole there. But yeah. But I'm very confident there's zero chance that Rico Dowdle has more carries than Ezekiel Elliott in week one. And if they do, then they have another problem because it just makes the Cowboys look dumb for not going and getting a running back.
Okay, if Rico has 15 carries for 90 yards and Zeke has 10.
It's not sustainable for a win. Rico Dowdle, I like Rico Dowdle. Rico Dowdle is not a bell cow running back either.
But neither of them are going to be bell cows. It's a rotation. So, like, they're going to use Rico. They're going to use Zeke. They're going to use not Deuce.
Successful. Deuce can't
even. It's not successful. The Browns did it last year. The Rams did it last year.
Browns had Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And
the Browns had Nick Chubb for a game and a half. I should know. He was on my fantasy team and it ruined my season.
Listen, Ezekiel, I guarantee you that the Cowboys don't have a 1,000-yard rusher next year. And I don't think
They won't, and it be by design.
I don't think that's a good way to succeed when your best targets outside of CeeDee Lamb. I mean,
half the NFL last year didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher.
Okay, but look at the 49ers. They made the Super Bowl. They had Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, did they have a good running game before Christian McCaffrey when they didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher and their top guys were Elijah Mitchell and Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson Jr.?
I guarantee you,
keep going with these names that like we're going to
if the 49ers didn't have Christian McCaffrey last season, they're not making the Super Bowl. The same way that I think that the Eagles are going to be a much huger threat because they have Saquon Barkley now, if he's healthy. If Saquon Barkley stays healthy, he's a top three running back in the NFL.
He got him to the Super Bowl. Well, a couple years before that, the 49ers were in the Super Bowl and they didn't have Christian McCaffrey. They did the same thing that they did with Christian McCaffrey, which was blow it because that's what Kyle Shanahan does in the Super Bowl.
Yes, I just think that the Cowboys – this all comes back to me thinking the Cowboys should have signed Derrick Henry, and they fumbled the bag. They fumbled the bag. They didn't even call him, and that's just such a wasted opportunity if you were really trying to win. And that's the thing. If you had told me that signing Dak to an extension would have given them the money to bring in Derrick Henry, all means, do it.
There's actually a correlation there because – For those who haven't already heard this 1,000 times by now, Dak and Derrick Henry have the same agent.
Yeah.
At the time that Derrick Henry was in free agency, Dak's agent was not taking calls from the Cowboys because they weren't calling him because they were, you know, they're doing what Stephen Jones always does. He gives them a lowball offer and he's like, oh, that's our final offer. And then they don't talk for a little bit. So, of course, he wasn't going to pick up the phone and call his agent because they're not talking.
Yeah.
But if they had extended Dak, maybe they're on talking terms. Maybe they talked to Derrick Henry, but not for the reasons you said. But other than that, Chris, congratulations on working Derrick Henry into an episode where we didn't even plan to talk about the running back position.
I know we didn't, but when Derrick Henry runs for 120 yards against the Cowboys in week four? It's one of those weeks. It's going to hurt. It's not going to be fun. It's in Dallas too, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to that game.
And you're going to see it live in person how much running backs matter.
I'm going to see big old Mozzie Smith tackling him for a loss of 3 yards.
If Mozzie Smith
I'm going to text you.
And if Mozzie Smith is locking up Derrick Henry, then the Cowboys are making the Super Bowl.
And on that note, and then we're going to wrap it up, I swear.
Yeah, I know. We got off topic.
On because you brought this up as well, if they can shore up the interior of that defensive line, Mozzie Smith, by all reports, he's getting bigger. The Cowboys also, we found out that they added former nose tackle for the Bengals who played under Mike Zimmer, Domata Pico. They added him in some capacity. I don't think it's actually been confirmed what his actual role is, but he's with the Cowboys coaches in some capacity helping out for OTAs. And of course, Pico was he played for a very long time in the NFL. Very, very good run stuffing nose tackle, big dude himself, and he knows the scheme. He played, I think it was like 9 years between Mike Zimmer and Zimmer's successor in Cincinnati, Paul Gunther, who's now on the staff as the run game coordinator. So between those two, this guy knows exactly what he wants. Who better to work with and mentor Mozzie Smith as he's supposed to be taking on this bigger role, figuratively and literally, for Mike Zimmer's defense. But with that, and tying it all together, and because we didn't plan on talking about running backs and defensive tackles, I don't have a good segue to wrap this whole thing
up. I don't either. We can do like how the round table used to be and just like make a noise or something.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. I won't put you on the spot and make you make a noise, but what is the most recent movie that you've seen in theaters and one sentence review of it?
I watched the Mad Max Furiosa movie. Absolute banger. It's a banger movie. Incredible movie. I actually liked it, I think, more than Fury Road. If you've seen that, I thought it was Chris Hemsworth. Absolutely killed it. Anna Joy Taylor. Absolutely killed it. It was great. It's a great movie theater movie. If you have any interest in seeing the movie and you're lazy and you just don't want to see it in theaters, that's a mistake. Go see it in theaters. It's made for the big screen. That's all I got to say.
I love it. What a great way to close the show out. I haven't seen the movie yet. It's on my list.
Really good.
I'm going to see it. I'm going to go see it in the theater. Encourage everybody else to go see it in the theater. See all movies in theaters because the theater industry needs it.
It needs it. And going to the theaters is great. Just going.
It's a great experience. I love it.
Experience. It's very relaxing. It's a good therapy.
Get a huge tub of popcorn, massive thing of soda.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
I agree.
Fully healthy. On that note, though, this is the writer's block. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up there because we're ending on a hot note, I think, talking about Furiosa and movies. Go see some movies until we come back next week. Hopefully Brandon will be back, probably talking about Trey Lance since he didn't have the chance.
Ryan Flournoy, baby.
Trey Lance to Ryan Flournoy all day. So make sure to come back next week. But until then, for Chris Holling, I'm David Hellman, signing off. And remember, always go Cowboys.